You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And welcome to the Rob Carson Show. If you're just joining us, I'm Mary Walter in for Rob Carson, and you can join in 1-800-922-6680. That is my number. You can also reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio, and I will try to get back to you. Try to, you know, read your comments on the air as much as I can, as quickly as I can. But, you know, sometimes it's a little hard to multitask to do all those things at once. But I try. Coming up in about half an hour is Mark Trammell. He's the executive director and general counsel at the Center for American Liberty. We're going to discuss the line between free speech and protesting. You have the right to protest. You have the right to free speech. But where does that line, you know, get blurred? Where's the definitive point of that line? That's what I think needs to be discussed, because that's going on a lot. I want to talk about something else that has nothing to do with the protest, because other things are happening. The House Speaker, Mike Johnson's in trouble. Yeah, they want to get rid of him. His approval ratings are plummeting among Republicans and supporters of Trump, because there are a lot of people who support Trump but are not Republicans. I am not a registered Republican. I support Donald Trump. So maybe I apparently fall into that group. And his popularity is gaining among Democrats and supporters of Joe Biden. So next week, Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to call a privileged resolution on a motion to vacate to get him out of the speakership, because we only did it last year. So let's do it again, right? Democrats, though, intend to vote to save him by voting for the motion to table her resolution. Hakeem Jeffries, who's the House Minority Leader, he's the top Democrat in the House. He has essentially seized control of the chamber from Johnson in the eyes of many Republicans. Polls over the last few weeks from The Economist and YouGov show that Johnson is surging with Democrats and collapsing with Republicans. In just the past 2 weeks alone, he's had a double-digit swing towards him from the Democrats and away from him with Republicans. So now, why could that possibly be? Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, I almost called him Mike Massie, Thomas Massie, yesterday announced that they're going to force a vote to vacate next week, right? And that's what the Democrats say they're going to save him from. They accused him of three betrayals: government funding, allowing surveillance of American citizens, and funding Ukraine without first securing the border. They say the motion, Johnson read from a statement saying, "This motion is wrong for the Republican conference, wrong for the institution, and wrong for the country." That was his defense. This is just wrong. Shouldn't be happening. He said, "I was being conscious and caring about my conference in our majority. It was a warning to stop serving the Democrats and support our Republican conference and support our agenda. He didn't do it." Marjorie Taylor Greene responding. So what were the three betrayals? All right. Thomas Massie laid him out. Funding Democrat priorities and killing regular order through spending bills. Thomas said the first betrayal was the omnibus bill. Under Kevin McCarthy, we did seven separate spending bills, which is what I think most of us want to see. I want to see separate spending bills so that you don't get it all lumped together. In order to get one good thing passed, you have to take three crummy things that you don't want in order to get the one good thing. That's become business as usual, and I think that that's wrong. So Kevin McCarthy did seven separate spending bills. Yep. Well, you got rid of Kevin McCarthy. Maybe that wasn't such a good idea, was it, in hindsight? When Mike Johnson took over, did we start working with the other side? No, you threw the seven in the trash. Although McCarthy ushered through a short-term continuing resolution in 23 for extra time, he had already assured seven of the 12 appropriation bills had passed. So he had worked to the other side that 7 out of these 12 are going to get passed. All the hard work that we had done, Mike Johnson disposed of and decided to do an omnibus bill. An omnibus bill that spent more than Nancy Pelosi's omnibus bill. That's hard to say. Omnibus bill that builds the FBI a brand new building. Meanwhile, we're over here in the Judiciary Committee asking the FBI for answers. They mock us. They thumb their noses at us. And why shouldn't they? We're going to build them a new building and send them strongly worded letters as if we're going to do something about it, right? About their insolence. We have an unelected bureaucracy that is running the country. Congress is supposed to have oversight over the FBI. And they just say, no, I'm sorry, we're not giving you the information you want. And that's it. And they can't do anything about it. But we're going to build them a new building? How does that work? He also said empowering warrantless surveillance of American citizens through the FISA Act, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is meant to get information spying on foreigners, not American citizens. But in a shock to no one, it has been turned around and used on American citizens. A second betrayal of Mike Johnson was passing FISA without warrants. Did he do this in a proper way? No. The Intel Committee stayed pretty close to the Biden administration and the intelligence state, which opposed reforms that would have required warrants before they spied on American citizens. I don't know. I think a warrant before you spy on me might be a good idea. Instead of just being able to do it willy-nilly, because we know they were spying on Catholics, right? Traditional Catholics. Nobody knew about that. And when we're told, oh, that was just one office. That was rogue. It's always rogue. We'll get to the bottom of it. Don't worry. We'll fix it. We're gonna work around our systems again. And we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen again. That's what we're going to do. Never works that way. So now they're saying, oh, you don't even need warrants. The authority for the FISA Section 702 programs rests with the Judiciary Committee, but Mike Johnson decided to let the Intel Committee run the program. We got a vote on the floor on warrants, whether you should have a warrant to spy on Americans. This is a constitutionally redundant vote. It should be obvious to anybody that's read the Constitution that you need warrants. So he's upset with him about that. And he said, we've got a slim majority. If he was the slim majority that cast the deciding vote that says you can spy on Americans without a warrant. It was 212 to 212. And he cast a vote, which is very rare. He cast the vote on the floor, and it was the deciding vote, and he went with warrantless searches on Americans. That doesn't make me happy. He broke his promise to secure the border before funding Ukraine. And Massey said, you know, the Foreign Aid Supplemental Bill started out as a veterans bill to give veterans better benefits. Chuck Schumer stripped every word out of it, put this supplemental in it, and sent it back to the House. And then Johnson used a complicated parliamentary scheme to exploit the urgency in Congress to pass aid to Israel to force through Ukraine funding. Massey said they pretended like we voted on four separate bills. And after those bills passed, they changed them to amendments and concurred with the Senate bill and then sent it back to the Senate. This whole thing, he is claiming, was pre-conferenced with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. So he's colluding, basically. He's saying that Johnson, the House Speaker, colluded with Chuck Schumer and the Biden White House. He said all three of Johnson's marquee accomplishments were in only 6 months were done with close collaboration with Schumer. And he said, you know, they didn't change a word of any of these bills. Chuck Schumer fought against all of the amendments. He wanted those bills exactly as Mike Johnson had passed them, exactly as Mike Johnson had promised. FISA without warrants, an omnibus bill with a new building for the FBI, and $100 billion of foreign aid with no American border security in it. As Marjorie Taylor Greene said, our border is wide, wide open. This was our last chance for leverage, and the speaker gave it up. So what do you think? Are you happy that they're going to push to get out Mike Johnson, to get him out and get someone new in there? I don't know what the answer is. I'm beginning to think you got to go with like a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Thomas Massey. Maybe you got to go with that wing, the pro-Trump wing of the Republican Party. Now, I didn't know who Mike Johnson was. I couldn't have picked him out of a lineup before he became the speaker. I don't think most of us could. I had no idea. And I had high hopes. I really did. But now, not so much. And I'm not like a Matt Gaetz kind of person, but I do think that maybe they're more likely going to preserve our rights. Maybe I don't like the way they go about it, but maybe in the end, it's not the way you get there. It's the result. That to me is important. So what do you think? Is this a good thing that we're going to be doing? Probably we're going to be doing it next week. I don't know if this is a good thing or not. 1-800-922-6680 or Mary Walter Radio on X. Your call's coming up on The Rob Carson Show.
The Rob Carson Show podcast is everywhere. Go to newsmax.com/listen for details.
And you're listening to The Rob Carson Show. I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Rob. I'm with you tomorrow as well. Don't forget, I have a podcast on Tuesdays starting at 7:15 Eastern Time, p.m. Eastern Time. It's live on YouTube and Getter. You can leave questions, comments. You can join in. And then it will be available up on YouTube, the video as well as the audio, obviously. And then the audio is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just look for Mary Walter Radio on any of those. There's no S in that. Now, I want to know, are you tired of the woke services like Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu and more? Yeah, you need to get Newsmax Plus. It's the fastest growing streaming service in America. With Newsmax Plus, you'll get the Newsmax channel and Newsmax 2, their newest network. You can watch their great shows with Rob Schmidt, Greta Van Susteren, Greg Kelly, Eric Bolling, and more. And you get real news, informed opinion, and the most cutting analysis from Dick Morris, Carrie Lake, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Huckabee, Victor Davis Hanson, and many more. President Trump says Newsmax Plus is terrific. You bypass the big media and get the Newsmax channel's great documentaries with actor John Voight and so much more. They even cover all the live big Trump rallies. They never censor President Trump like the big networks. So start your free trial today. Yep, it costs nothing to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com to register, then download the app and start watching. Millions are watching Newsmax. Be one of them. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com today. Now, Hermit Sal left me some comments here on X. He said, these student protesters should be identified and their student debt should not be canceled. If they can afford to miss class and vandalize, they can afford to pay off their debts and pay for the vandalism. Yes, they absolutely should. Thank you. Somebody else said here, did he say this? It looks like our constitutional rights are being rewritten in pencil on toilet paper. And that is in response to what's happening with with the FISA warrants, et cetera, without needing FISA, the spying on American citizens without needing a warrant. Warrantless spying. I'm pretty sure that's unconstitutional. But then again, I'm an optimist. A little bit more, just some news of things that have been going on besides this destruction and the rioting and the rise of anti-Semitism and the Hitler Youth on our campuses, is you have Mike Turner, who is the House Intelligence Committee chair, and Elise Stefanik, who is the House Republican Conference chair. They're demanding that the Justice Department investigate Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer. They allege that he committed perjury and knowingly made false statements while testifying before Congress in 2019. How many years ago? Now, again, he would have his house raided and be walked out in his underwear in front of his neighbors in leg shackles and, manacles and thrown in pretrial detention if he were pro-Trump. But since he's anti-Trump and he's going to be the star witness in Alvin Bragg's case, Aaron is going to forget about that perjury. They first called for this investigation in November, after he admitted in his time on the stand during the trial stemming from Letitia James's civil fraud lawsuit that the testimony he gave before the committee was knowing and intentionally false. He admitted it. But Turner and Stefanik said, yeah, nothing from the DOJ. This goes back to they just stonewall and they just don't give Republicans anything if they don't feel like it and they get away with it. Turner and Stefanik said Biden's DOJ eagerly prosecuted two different former Trump senior presidential advisors, Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro. Peter Navarro is sitting in jail right now for contesting the lawfulness of a subpoena. In fact, the Biden Justice Department brought the first contempt of Congress prosecution seen in nearly 40 years. And she said that perjury and false statements before Congress are crimes that undermine the integrity of the constitutional duty to conduct oversight and inquiries, far more so than contesting the lawfulness of a subpoena. Yet, despite an admission from Mr. Cohen that he lied under oath to Congress, the Biden Justice Department did nothing. I don't think that's a surprise, right? She said the double standard is glaring, they wrote in this statement. They wrote, "You are trying to protect the reputation of an admitted perjurer, one who just so happens to be set to testify against former President Trump in New York. We urge you to stop politicizing and weaponizing the Biden Justice Department and open a criminal investigation into whether Mr. Cohen committed perjury and knowingly made false statements to the committee during his testimony in February 2019. So this is what happened. While he was on the stand during Trump's non-jury civil trial stemming from James's lawsuit in October, remember with Judge Engoron, that whole sideshow, he was presented with the transcript of his February 2019 testimony. When asked if he was being honest in front of the House Intel Committee in February of 2019, because it would contradict what he was saying in the courtroom, he said, no. Trump's attorney, Alina Habba, said to him, so you lied under oath in February of 2019. Is that your testimony? Yes, Cohen replied. So he admitted that he lied. He admitted that he committed perjury. Now, my hunch is that they're not going to touch Cohen until after this Trump trial regarding the bookkeeping problem that they're alleging is a felony, 32 felonies, because it was a bookkeeping error. They're going to, you know, after all of this, when he is no longer useful to the state, the deep state, they're going to throw him under the bus and off he goes. I think that's what happens. That right now he's still useful to them, although I don't understand why, because he is being slaughtered, his reputation anyway, in court. And these are the prosecution's witnesses who are saying, oh, he was impossible to work with. It was this, it was that. No, I never dealt with Trump. I only dealt with Michael Cohen. Yeah, no, it was a check from Michael Cohen. So it's not going well for them. And I'm so surprised that they even brought Michael Cohen in. And I would think that they would know what these people were going to say. But my hunch is Michael Cohen goes bye-bye once they no longer need him. That's what these people do. Harvey Weinstein, remember that guy? Yep. He is facing a new trial now. His rape conviction was overturned. And now, though, yesterday, a judge remanded him back to prison. Poor guy can't catch a break. And I feel sorry for him, though. He appeared in person in a wheelchair at the New York court hearing yesterday. It was mostly procedural. He had been hospitalized for a couple of days. And when they got him to Rikers, he was examined upon his arrival and he was sent to Bellevue. At the hearing, Alvin Bragg insisted that Weinstein be remanded for now and emphasized his plans to retry Harvey Weinstein on the sexual assault charges as quickly as possible. He said, We have every belief the defendant will be convicted again at trial. Now, his defense said, the guy's super sick. You can't put him in jail, but they lost. The judge scheduled a discovery hearing for May 29th. Weinstein's new trial is tentatively scheduled for after Labor Day. That's because he's not Trump. If it was Trump, it would be scheduled tomorrow because they got to get it in before the election, right? So what happened was when it was overturned, they overturned a 2020 rape conviction a week ago, ordering a new trial. The court found that Weinstein's trial judge allowed prosecutors to call women who said that Weinstein had assaulted them and called them to testify, even though their accusations did not specifically relate to the charges that he was being tried on. He was sentenced to 23 years in prison after being convicted of an assault on Mimi Haley in 06 and Jessica Hahn in 2013. Jessica Mon. He was acquitted of first-degree rape and two counts of predatory sexual assault. Okay, but here's what I want to get to. His rep, Judah Engelmeyer, told Fox News Digital, the trial failed at objectivity from the minute former Judge Burke berated Harvey, asking him if he wanted to spend the rest of his life in prison over the use of a cell phone that occurred before the judge ever entered the courtroom and began the day's proceedings. Wow, kind of sounds like the way Judge Marchand treats Donald Trump, doesn't it? Burke was rejected from the bench as a result, and the case should have been too. From the lies a juror told to private lawyers representing non-case related complaints, acting as prosecutorial surrogates, we were often gagged. Sound familiar? The jury was steered in a direction they never would have gone if it were honest. Ultimately, the appeals court found the trial judge should have only allowed witnesses to testify about the sexual assault encounters that Weinstein's charges stemmed from. During the trial, multiple women testified about sexual assaults allegedly performed by Weinstein, even though he wasn't being charged with that. A lot of that's going on in the courtroom right now, too, with Donald Trump. Huh. So it looks like, again, this is just a show trial to get him convicted. before the election. Coming up, Mark Trammell will be joining us to discuss the line between free speech and your right to protest. That's next on The Rob Carson Show. Welcome to the Rob Carson Show. If you are just joining us, coming up next hour will be Chris Markowski, the CEO of Markowski Investments. But right now on the Newsmax hotline, it is Mark Trammell. He's the executive director and general counsel at the Center for American Liberty. You can find him on X at Mark_Trammell with two M's and two L's. Mark, welcome to the Rob Carson Show. How are you?
I'm well, Mary. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. So one of the big conversations that I think everyone is having right now is the right to free speech, the right to protest, and what's happening on college campuses. And, you know, I would assume at the Center for American Liberty, you guys are all about the First Amendment and you know, the Constitution and preserving our rights. Where is the line, though?
It's a great question. We're all about the First Amendment. We're all about preserving rights. I think what we have to do, though, is step back and look at what's happening on college campuses, right? So there's tremendous case law codifying that students have free speech rights on campus. And those free speech rights give students the ability to be abject morons and say stupid, obnoxious things, right? So we have to separate really the content of what they're saying from the actions that they're perpetuating on campus. So free speech rights definitely extend onto campus, but there's a difference between an analysis at a minimum between what's happening on private school campuses like Columbia, which is not does not have to follow the First Amendment. You know, if a student at Columbia sued Columbia under First Amendment as a legal theory, that would be dismissed. But then students at UCLA or the University of Texas Austin, both public universities where we're seeing riots happening,
yeah,
those students could have a First Amendment lawsuit against those universities. So again, it's kind of a murky issue, and it really comes down to specific facts and circumstances mm-hmm. on each campus.
So when you say they would have a First Amendment case against those universities because they're public universities, so you're saying they are allowed to say mean, hateful things because of the First Amendment and they're public universities, but private universities can crack down on what we now know as hate speech, which did not exist until like 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
So how does hate speech change this? This idea of, which I don't understand, hate speech, but how does that change things, if at all?
Well, the idea of hate speech, the courts have not said this is unconstitutional yet. I think it's coming. But the idea of hate speech and hate crime laws are both really unconstitutional. You're punishing people for their thoughts and ideas, and that would violate the First Amendment for sure. But if we're looking at Columbia, right, those students, these Gaza encampments they've set up, these quote liberated zones, the universities can and should swiftly restore peace back to these campuses. The same could be said of public school universities as well. They can also restore peace back to these campuses, because what's happening is you're seeing student behavior go beyond what the First Amendment protects. So they have the right to say mean, hateful things, but they do not have the right to, through force and intimidation, prevent Jewish students from entering into academic facilities on campus, which we're seeing. And at the Center for American Liberty, we're getting calls from students at Columbia, from students at UCLA, who are being denied equal access to their universities. They can't go to class because there are protesters, many of whom, Mary, are not even students, as we saw.
Yes.
Eric Adams make this point yesterday. Many of these are outside paid agitators who are going on campus and preventing students from being able to have the education that they're paying for. So at a private school campus like Columbia, those students have the ability to file lawsuits against their, and at this point I'm really talking about Jewish students who are being denied access to class, in theory, I guess that wouldn't just be limited to Jewish students. Any student is not being able to go to class as a result of these encampments and this really campus takeover could sue on a contract theory, breach of contract. Their university has made a promise to provide this service, and they've promised that there'll be a safe learning environment, that there won't be harassment on campus, and they have not fulfilled their end of the bargain. So those students,
right,
at those private schools can file lawsuits under breach of contract. And then, you know, I think private school or public school campuses, it's just a very different analysis altogether. But even then, the encampment zones, these intimidation tactics of force and being physically violent with other students, that's not protected by the First Amendment. And those students who are being violent, those paid agitators, should absolutely be arrested.
Right. And listen, it's not just Jewish students are being kept from going into these zones that they've decided are theirs and theirs alone. They're also, if you do not have a wristband, regardless of your religion, if you don't have a wristband, you cannot get into those zones because you're considered an agitator. So you can't get in there. So your idea, you're right, the idea of being able to sue them, I think it's great. Alan Dershowitz was on Hannity on Fox two nights ago, and he is offering, he's getting lawyers together to represent these students pro bono, to file civil suits in instances where they can't file criminal suits. And he said he was on, and then about half hour later, and he said he already got a whole bunch of calls from lawyers who are willing to step up and do this. And I think that's a great thing. I think that's a wonderful thing that you see this happening, that they're standing up to help these kids, because normally these are not causes, more conservative causes. You don't usually get a lawyer to represent you. Sometimes it's a little difficult. But it seems as if this now crosses party lines, because this is more of a religious issue. It is a religious issue as well as terrorists. So comment about that. But I also want to ask you in relationship to that, before I forget it, because I'm old and I'll forget stuff. I gotta get Prevagen. The idea of them being terrorists and openly saying I am Hamas. Can we do something? Is there some provision under federal law to punish people who align themselves with a known terrorist group? So two questions.
Yeah. So on the Dershowitz question, I think that's terrific. I think more students filing lawsuits, holding these campuses accountable is really important. And that's one of the ways that moving forward, you kill this type of illegal activity from happening again. Before I forget, you made a comment about these zones and not allowing, it's not just Jewish students who aren't allowed. It's also members of the press who aren't allowed in. And one of our clients is Andy Ngo.
You
know Andy.
Yeah.
We've represented Andy for several years. We actually, at the Center for American Liberty, recently were able to secure $330,000 in judgments against members of the Rose City Antifa organization.
Yes.
Who brutally assaulted Andy in Portland.
Yep.
When he was covering undercover the Chaz Zone. And what Andy pointed out on Twitter this week, which I thought was just brilliant and insightful, are just the similarities between the Chaz Zones that we saw years ago in Portland and other cities, major cities across the country, and what's going on in these campuses as well. You see the flood of money coming in. I mean, the matching tents. Now everyone has like a matching scarf and like look, and it's just all very, very obvious that this is not organic, but this is being forced upon these students in these areas. But if you file these lawsuits, you have the opportunity to create some real meaningful change. We see that's why colleges and universities today have such robust free speech protections, because people file lawsuits. Our CEO, Harmeet Dhillon, and I, a few years ago, sued Cal Berkeley when Cal Berkeley wouldn't allow Ann Coulter and Ben Shapiro on
right,
the campus,
yeah,
but would allow far-left speakers. And it's because of lawsuits like that that secure free speech for all students today. And Mary, I am terribly sorry. I have already forgotten. Maybe I'm getting old. I've already forgotten your second question.
I remembered it was about hate speech, like the rise of hate speech, and saying, well, you can't say this. And we've allowed the left to muzzle us and saying, well, that's hateful. You can't say that. I was like, when did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the reality is you have a First Amendment right to say hateful things and to say mean. You can tweet as mean as you want. Like, that's protected by the First Amendment. So this rise of censorship, and that's really what it is. The universities should be this open forum for debate, where the best ideas rise to the top and the worst ideas fall by the wayside. But we've really lost universities at this point, right? What we're seeing is not this debate on the merits. What we're seeing is, through force and intimidation, really bad ideas being forced upon an entire generation of young people, and that has ramifications for our country and for civility. What's happening on college campuses today is going to be happening at a far greater scale in major cities, and you're already starting to see some of that across the country. And so it's really important that we have that First Amendment protection on campus, so that these terrible leftist ideas, these communist Marxism, which we've defeated time and time again, generation after generation have defeated these ideas, we have to keep doing it, right? Yeah. And we're seeing this stifling of debate on college campuses through force and intimidation. That force and intimidation is not protected by the First Amendment, and those schools should act accordingly.
So very quickly, I'm going to run out of time here. God, I have so many questions for you. okay, so you got a judgment for Andy Ngo. You got a judgment, but are you ever going to get any money? Because if you would have to follow the trail of money, you know, back to its source, and it's all dark money, and they hide it very well. I mean, Hillary Clinton probably would be a little jealous at how good they do this.
Yeah, so we've already recovered some of that money for Andy, because at least one of the defendants had insurance and that covered. With the other ones, though, we're currently in litigation seeking enforcement of those judgments. So you can put liens on bank accounts and whatnot, and that's really the next step for that litigation. So I think these movements are very well funded.
Yes.
Again, you see the uniformity of clothing and the uniformity of the tents and whatnot on campuses, and these people are being paid to go from, like, they're paid. A lot of these people are just paid agitators. Like, that is their full time job. They go from one cause to the next one, and they're getting paid good money to do it. And so we're going to try to continue to hold them accountable. Andy's case is certainly one area in which we're continuing to hold them accountable. And at some point, I'm very confident that we'll see that money make its way to Andy.
As well it should. I mean, what they did to him was just absolutely criminal. And yet he continues on. And so good for him. I really admire him and others who step up and do something that I know I would not have the guts to do. I would not have the guts to stand in that breach. So I have to give him a boatload of credit on that. We've run out of time. Thank you so much, Mark. Great having you. We'll have to have you up next time in. I'm happy to have you on again. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. You can find Mark Trammell on X at Mark_Trammell, and also at the Center for American Liberty. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Absolutely. Have a great week. More coming up. I have so much to share with you, the O'Keefe Media Group story, and also immigration stories that we have to look at, as well as what's happening, updates on all the campus craziness, too. So maybe we'll just do an extra hour of the show. I don't think they'll mind. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to Rob Carson. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Rob Carson on the Rob Carson Show. Just a reminder that if you feel so moved, check out Minden, M-I-N-D-E-N, Strong, on GoFundMe. That's Minden, Iowa, is where Rob Carson grew up, and the town was destroyed by tornadoes. And if you follow Rob on X, you saw some of those videos. He went there just to see what he could do, and you know, to view it, to film it so he could share it with everybody. It's just so heartbreaking. And they're only at $1,600 of their $25,000 goal to help the residents of Minden, Iowa. So if you feel so moved, if you can, you know, do it, you got some extra change in your pocket and you'd like to help someone out, go to GoFundMe and look for Minden, M-I-N-D-E-N, Strong. That's what Rob is doing right now. I think he's home now, but he did go there to try to help. Let's talk a little bit about immigration, shall we? Yesterday, we talked about how the Biden administration wants to start bringing Palestinians to this country, because what could possibly go wrong? Well, listen to this. In Seattle, apparently, if you're in the country illegally, you learn how to play the game very, very quickly, very quickly. Hundreds of migrants or illegals, mostly from Africa and Venezuela, have now swarmed into a park in Seattle. And they erected a tent encampment and then issued a list of demands, including free housing, food, and some other things that they need. The park was invaded in a planned takeover by more than 200 illegals who brought in wood pallets and erected tents on top of them. Apparently, the wood pallet industry right now, the wood pallet market, is doing really well. I should have invested. I had no idea. And I should have seen it coming, because it's an election year. So it's time for the election year rioting. I should have seen it. It happened a little early this year. I was expecting it more like May, June. But, you know, I missed an opportunity. One of the illegals from the Republic of Congo, a native John Tistay, told KOMO-TV that they're going to stay until their demands are met. He said, so far they haven't kicked us out. We plan to stay until we get housing. He said the government needs to give them housing, work permits, and other things that they would like free of charge. Tistay admitted that they are being guided by activist groups, but wouldn't tell KOMO-TV the name of the groups. And he said he and his fellow migrants were kicked out of their free housing in a motel when city funding ran out. The motel owners turned out all the non-paying residents. Weird how that happens. Welcome to America. That's the way it goes. So they had no place to stay. And since then, these activist groups have been planning all the moves for the evicted migrants, helping them make their list of demands, etc. A Venezuelan national told Fox News that camping is very, very difficult for everyone. Even now, we don't even know how much time we're going to have to camp. We don't have these answers. We can't tell anyone what we're doing because we don't know ourselves. Another Republic of Congo native named Samuel said they have children who were born here. They have kids who are in school here. They are the future of America. They're asking for support to be able to stay here. Well, you came here because you were being persecuted, right? So use your skills, get a job. Oh, wait, you're here illegally. Well, there's the fly in the ointment, isn't it? The station was also told by an illegal in the encampment that he wants the government to give him money. Another said the government needs to give him a place to live. And the left-wing activists are attempting to elicit donations of tents, blankets, and tarps from the public. But unfortunately, this is a camp that was really big with families. They like to go there. Their kids played ball and games there. Not anymore. All right. I've got more immigration news coming up for you on the Rob Carson Show.
Hey guys, it's Carson. Our money loses value every year due to inflation. In fact, the dollar has lost over 98% of its value relative to gold. What if you could earn income in gold, which can't get inflated away, instead of dollars? Monetary Metals does just that. They offer the ability to earn income in gold, growing your total ounces over time by leasing or loaning your gold to qualified gold-using businesses. Earn 2 to 5% annually on your gold while supporting qualified businesses in the gold industry. Or if you're an accredited investor, you could earn even higher yields, double digits, in their gold bond offerings. You can open an account directly on Monetary Metals' website in less than 15 minutes. Fund your account by purchasing gold directly from Monetary Metals at less than 1% over spot, or you can use gold you already have. They provide free shipping and insurance and free storage and insurance for any metal in your account. Opt out of the dollar, central bankers, fiat currency, the corrupt financial system, and get your own personal gold standard with Monetary Metals. Visit monetary-metals.com/Carson for more information. Again, monetary-metals.com/Carson for more information or to get started opening your account.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to the Rob Carson Show. Where have you been? I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Rob here. There's just so much to get to. Hope you're enjoying it. If you want to join me, if you'd like to comment, you can call in 1-800-922-6680, or you can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S, it's Mary Walter Radio, because there's only one of me. There is a lot going on about what is happening in the case in New York, Alvin Bragg's case against Donald Trump. According to one of my friends who's a talk show host, he said the entire case against Trump just crumbled today. So it's going to be interesting. I'll bring that to you tomorrow on the show, as much of that as I can. One of the things, listen to this. So South Carolina, we're just talking about immigration. So South Carolina, a state lawmaker is calling for a hearing with South Carolina's Medicaid director because there were allegations that the agency sent voter registration materials to a non-U.S. citizen. But the state election commission says, well, there's no evidence of people being fraudulently registered to vote. So we may have sent it, may have been sent to them, but nobody fraudulently registered to vote. So they're really honest people. Representative Jordan Pace sent a letter requesting an investigation to the chairs of the House Legislative Oversight Committee and the House Medical, Military, Municipal, and Public Affairs Committee. And he said, upon discovery that Health and Human Services has been distributing voter registration forms to non-citizen migrants, I request an emergency hearing with the Director of Health and Human Services to clarify the details and answer why these forms are being given to non-citizens. And this is going to be another one of those, oh, sorry, you know, it was a low-level employee somewhere, didn't mean to do it. You know, these things happen. We're going to figure it out, and we're going to change the process to make sure it never happens again. This is how everything happens with our government. The most, not all of them, but we do seem to employ our fair share, if not more than our fair share, of incompetent people to work in the government. Greenville State Representative Adam Morgan is a Republican running for a congressional seat. Posted on social media in South Carolina, posted on social media that South Carolina's Medicaid office gave forms to a refugee in Spartanburg County with information on registering to vote. And there's a picture of the form that this citizen says, migrant who is not allowed to vote, supposedly sent to him. The agency said it's investigating the incident. They only send information to legal residents. Morgan later updated the thread to clarify the forms came from the South Carolina Department of Health and Human Services office. Now, apparently what happened was, is they sent this back. They sent the form back and said, I'm not eligible to vote. And so you know what happened? They sent them more forms. More voter registration forms. They're like, oh, well, here, let me send you some more just in case you got some friends who want to vote. So there's clearly a problem. And this is something that I think most of us assume just is happening all over, because we register people to vote everywhere, right? So like in many states, if you're in the country illegally, you can still get a driver's license. All you have to do is show up with bills that show that you're living at a certain address, right? So you have to, you have like... In my state, if you're a citizen, you need 6 points of identification, and each thing like has different point value. If you're in the country illegally, you only need 4, which really burns my butt every time I go to the DMV. It really makes me mad. But at the same time, we have Motor Voter, where you're automatically, they right then and there, would you like to vote? Even the people who are there who don't have any kind of legal proof of legal citizenship, would you like to vote? Would you like to register to vote? They ask them. We're registering illegals at the DMV to vote. It's absolutely insane. And this is happening more and more and more around the country, because that's what it's about, right? That's what it's about. Let's go to some of this. This what's happening on college campuses. You know, I'm going to try to keep some of this for tomorrow, since I don't think we're going to get to all of this today. But I want to go to what happened overnight and yesterday. And I want to go to this Columbia professor. This would be cut 6, Brian. NBC News correspondent Antonia Hilton spoke with a Columbia professor named Joseph Slaughter. This happened yesterday, and this was a day after they stormed the campus, cleared the encampment, arrested the protesters who took over Hamilton Hall. And she was talking to him about, you know, the scene that was there, and he said, you know, it was really frightening for everyone. And then he went into why it happened. Here's Professor Slaughter.
The fact that the building can be occupied is due partly to the gross mismanagement of this administration. It has escalated consistently for the last 7 months. These students have been attempting to get what they understand to be a human rights message about justice for Palestine out for 7 months, and at every turn they have been met with repressive actions to shut down their ability to speak, to demonstrate, to try to make their voices heard in what they see as the greatest human rights crisis of the moment. And in this administration, in failing to listen to its students beginning in October and November, in failing to hear the voices of its faculty, experts in the area, coming up with their kind of administrative decisions among a small cabinet of ministers at the top of underneath the president, they have consistently escalated and kettled the speech of the students.
So, very interesting, right? So he's blaming leadership at the school. And I find the role of the faculty in all of this to be fascinating. Because you see the faculty out there, you know, dressed like the kids. And you can tell. I'm going to say, maybe this is the wrong thing to say. But it's so easy to identify them, right? Like, it's just so easy. When I was living in Washington, D.C., I was living just on the outskirts of D.C. in Maryland, right on the edge, 3 blocks from the D.C. border. And what was fascinating to me, and you can find it pretty much everywhere once you start to look for it, you can't tell if it's an aging hippie or if it's a somewhat well-off liberal, right? They've given up. Somewhere around like 1974, they gave up. Like they just stopped. The hair all looks like Bernie Sanders. They all look like they just like combed their hair with a balloon in the morning. It's just all over the place. The women gave up. They don't do anything with their hair. They don't color it. Like, you don't want to color your hair, God bless you. But if they do color it, it's like Kool-Aid colors, right? It's you know, circus clown colors. And okay, fine. That's fine. It makes it easier to identify them in their natural habitat, right? And they all have the same look. They all look unkempt, just like the hippies in the 60s, right? But look what happened to the hippies in the 60s. Bernie Sanders et al., you know, hanging out in Haight-Ashbury. From the pictures I've seen, they all looked like they needed a bath, right? Which is why I think maybe every now and then just bringing in the fire department to hose them down is not necessarily a bad idea. You don't have to hurt them. But, you know, you throw a little soap at them and you get the fire department in to wet them down and just tell them, just clean yourselves up, because that's going to be stinky after a while. They just have that look. It's the same thing now. You could always identify them in the wild, and they probably say the same thing about us, because we actually take care of ourselves, and the women try to look presentable and the guys don't look like the women, which I think is important, because sometimes the guys look better than you if they look the same as the women. I just want to get to this last cut from between this reporter, Antonia Hilton, and this professor, Joseph Slaughter, at Columbia. This is Cut 7, Brian.
They released a statement this morning, the president, saying that they tried to have productive conversations with the students that went on for 8 days, essentially saying they did their best to avoid what happened here. Do you not believe them?
They may have tried to do their best over the past 8 days. They did not do their best over the previous 6 months. If they had had those productive conversations with the students when they were clearly making their statements in absolutely peaceful, vigil-like manners in November and in October, we wouldn't be here today. If they had bothered to sit down with the students, my understanding is that this president refused to meet with the leaders of the two student groups that she unilaterally suspended in November, refused to meet to talk with them about their demands, about their concerns, refused to hear the vast majority of students who see this as an unfolding, potentially genocide.
You know, now I don't know how it works. I went to a small private Catholic school, a university, and it was the Augustinians, and the Augustinians don't play. So none of this happened on our campuses. It was also a time where, I don't know, we weren't that politically active. It just wasn't a big thing on campus to be politically active. There were no protests or anything along those lines. The biggest thing was, can you get out of class on Friday in order to go to the local bar? You know, in time to be there when it opened at 2. That was our biggest worry. And so maybe it was a better time, but we just didn't have this on campus. And I've been looking to see what's going on the campus, and they had a protest, but it's very tightly controlled. Everything is very, very tightly controlled there, and they will kick you off campus in a heartbeat. Like, if you break the rules, you're done. And they send you home to mommy and daddy, and they don't give mommy and daddy their money back. It's all right there when you sign the contract and you give them your money. Your kid misbehaves, breaks the code of conduct, found to be egregious, off they go. They're yours, and we're keeping your money. And that's it. So they don't play with any of this stuff. Should they have talked to them? Probably. But I think we've established that the president of Columbia isn't exactly the most competent, right? All right, we're going to get into more. What some of their demands are is hilarious. And what happened. Oh, and I do have some good news for you as well. I'm going to save that to the end, the good news. But there's a lot coming out. And UCLA, what happened at UCLA was just amazing this morning. All that's coming up. And then after that, we have Chris Markowski coming up on The Rob Carson Show.
Let's make 2024 the year we turn back from nonsense to common sense. It's the Rob Carson Show.
And I'm Mary Walter in for Rob Carson. So UCLA, they really went to town at UCLA this morning, just before 2 a.m. Police broke through the Friday. Police broke through the barricades of the encampment. They were outnumbered by protesters. They were forced to retreat. They wound up firing tear gas at the anti-Israeli protesters at UCLA. And all classes were canceled for yesterday and today. And they I love what their list of demands are. They posted a Google Doc online. It was posted by Students for Justice in Palestine at UCLA. And it shows a list of the items that they need at the UCLA Palestine Solidarity Encampment. They need gas masks and EpiPens. Wait, we should give you gas masks? I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. Airsoft goggles, knee and elbow pads, utility gloves without reinforced knuckles, bright flashlights with strobes, rope, zip ties, skater helmets, shield, wood to construct a barrier, and non-steroid inhalers. They also need food. They would prefer that it be hot. They want hot food for lunch. They want it has to be gluten-free. They will not accept packaged foods, coffee, bagels, bananas, and nuts. They also want sleeping pads, various types of batteries, electric and solar powered generators, Aquaphor, which is an over-the-counter skin ointment, and no sunscreen. I don't know why they don't want sunscreen, but no sunscreen. They prefer to get skin cancer. Thank you. Organizers are requesting that donors make sure the items comply with the Boycott, Divest, and Sanctions movement, BDS movement, which promotes boycotting, divesting from, and economic sanctions against Israel. So that's why they don't want the bagels. Even if, like, I don't know, An Amish guy down the street made them. They don't want the bagels. It's hilarious. It's like they made this encampment. They said, oh, yeah, let's make a tree fort. And they made a tree fort. We're going to show our mom and dad we're never coming down. And then they're like, they're asking their mom and dad to please send them food. And I need something to sleep on. And could you please send me lotion because my skin's a little dry. And I'm going to need all my medication. I need my EpiPens. And oh, by the way, I'm also going to need skater helmets and gas masks and pads and gloves and goggles and ropes and zip ties and everything else so that I can wage war on you. I'm curious as to how they think that's going to happen. Although I got to tell you, they probably think it will happen because up until now I would have told you, yeah, it's going to happen. A fight broke out between the anti-Israeli and pro-Israeli supporters overnight. The Palestinian Solidarity Encampment was set upon by these pro-Israeli protesters. And that became a big thing because they used fireworks, etc. So now they're being investigated. But as part of the protests, this SJP group, which is organizing all over the country, posted a chant sheet for them too, with various pro-Palestinian chants, which they're big on rhyming. They would have been great on Match Game back in, what was that, the 70s? And I remember watching that when I come home from school, or it would be on before I was sick. There was nothing else on. Match Game was on. They chant Free, Free Palestine. That's a big one. Every time the media lies, a neighborhood in Gaza dies. And the only thing I could think of was every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. It just reminded me of that so much. No more sayings, please divest our tuition fees. So they're very big on rhyming. I don't know if that's an actual class that they can take there, that there's a class that, you know, allows you to teaches you how to rhyme to make slogans for, you know, when you're waging an illegal encampment, that could be part of it. Governor Gavin Newsom condemned the recent violence there as well at the University of California, UCLA. And I want to, you know, I have time to play this here. I want to play Cut 8. This is from UCLA, and this was filmed by a black man who is clearly an older student. He doesn't look it, but he's an older student, and he's got his daughter there. And his daughter is walking there, and she's got, like, her little baby doll, and she's got a little stroller for it. And he's trying to walk on campus, but he wants to walk through where the encampment is. Listen to what happens.
Problem, sir. You said you had a problem,
yes,
you right?
You do, leave.
Bro, I'm an African-American. You are a white man telling me to leave a part of the campus. Do you want me to go to Jasmine Rush and show her a photo of you, the dean of students, and let her know that you was harassing me?
Am I harassing?
Yeah, you are. You're asking me to leave a public place. You as a white man are asking an African-American student to leave a public area at UCLA campus. That's called racial discrimination, and that's a violation of the Civil Rights Act. So do you want to get out of my face now?
I mean, I think your presence is better on purpose.
What's that?
You're being an agitator.
An agitator, so you think the First Amendment is agitation?
No one. See, you're drawing lines that aren't.
Okay, because I'm practicing the First Amendment right.
And you're
to
allowed
record.
To do that.
Right. So I'm recording over here. This guy's recording me. You're not talking to him. Look, he's recording me. You're not talking to him. We got people over here. You know what I'm saying? I don't see you talking to them.
We haven't had any complaints
right,
about
so
them
you're,
being agitated.
Right. Well, you're just bothering me, bro.
We haven't had any complaints about them being agitated.
I don't know
what's
an agitator's plan?
I don't have to tell you that.
Right. Exactly. You can't even explain yourself, bro.
I don't have to tell you that. You're two white men
blocking an African-American student from walking around on the campus.
You're allowed to go wherever you want.
Where am I? I'm allowed to go where I want. You seem to be blocking my daughter's stroller from going forward. You just spilled my drink, and you're blocking my child stroller from moving forward. That's a little weird, bro. You're acting a little weird, bro.
I mean, so, I think right now you're acting a little
weird. Nah, you're going to have to get out of my face, bro. Sorry.
Right now, like, you know, you're making...
Yep, you sure are following me, though.
I mean, right now...
You're following me, you're sticking your hand in my face, you're putting your arms up over me, you're doing a lot of weird stuff, bro.
Sorry, man.
Why are you sorry? I don't know why you're sorry.
All right. And this went on for like two more minutes, and more of these protesters came up. Apparently, UCLA delegated security authority to the activists, who then began patrolling the perimeter of the encampment, and they only granted access to those who had these wristbands. So if you didn't have the wristband, so instead of putting, as I said before, yellow stars on the Jewish students, if you didn't have a wristband, you couldn't get in. But what I love about this is when the victimhood pyramid of the left butts up against itself. So now here are these students who are, we're victims. We're being victimized because they're taking down our encampment and they won't listen to us. Where they're also anti-Semites, but apparently they're also racist. And it's interesting for them. Now, these white students are being told, you're a white student telling me, a black man. Now, suddenly, they're the ones who are being painted as the oppressors, and they don't know what to do. So all they do is they follow this guy, and they keep trying to prevent him with their bodies from moving forward and prevent him from filming. Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating to watch. Coming up, Chris Markowski, the host of the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast and the CEO of Markowski Investments, going to join us. We're going to change the topic, change it up here a little bit, and talk about Bidenomics and your wallet. That's on The Rob Carson Show.
Hey guys, it's Carson. You know, everybody knows the next medical crisis just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's where the Wellness Company comes in. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and their new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID, even a bioweapon like a plague, the Wellness Company medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, antiparasitics on hand to make sure you and your family are safe from whatever the globalists throw at us next. Go to www.twc.health/Carson. Again, twc.health/Carson today and order. That's twc.health/Carson and use the promo code Carson to save 10%.
And welcome back to the Rob Carson Show. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Rob. I'll be with you again tomorrow. You can join in after our guest at 1-800-922-6680, or you can reach out to me on X, and I'll try to get your comments on the air. Joining us now on the Newsmax hotline is Chris Markowski. He's the host of the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast. He's also the CEO of Markowski Investments. You can find him on X at Chris Marko, M-A-R-K-O. Chris, thank you for joining us here on the Rob Carson Show. Welcome.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I haven't been on that X account in about 1,000 years now, just so you know.
Wait, I thought that was your new one. I thought that was the one.
I'm still trying to figure out X, for crying out loud. I guess I'm getting too old. When you start dating yourself in decades, you know you're in trouble.
Okay, because I went to the original one that I was told, and I thought it said, join me on my new account, Chris Marko. So,
I don't know. Maybe somebody's handling it for me. Thank you. I don't know.
Well, which is the correct one? Which is the correct address?
I just go to my website at watchdogonwallstreet.com. That's the easiest.
Okay, because I tagged you. I tagged you on X, so I tagged you at Chris Marko. So, sorry about that.
Lots
to get to. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is the Biden administration, and this kind of slid under the radar. But they want to increase taxes on capital gains and income-based wealth. And they want to do it as part of this DEI thing because they say it would reduce racial wealth inequality for Black and Hispanic families. And the Treasury Department outlined this in their analysis. So clearly this is one of the reasons why they're doing it. They pointed out that white families disproportionately hold assets subject to capital gains tax or are in a higher tax bracket. So a hike in those taxes would then benefit Black and Hispanic families. How does it benefit Black and Hispanic families as opposed to just hurt white families?
It doesn't. But what it does, and this is proof of, if you ever thought there was a conspiracy theory that Biden is not running the country and Obama is, this is it. If you want to go back to the debate between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, this is when they were obviously running for the Democratic nomination. This
yes.
very thing came up. And Charlie Gibson on ABC asked Barack Obama that because he wanted to double capital gains taxes, and Hillary didn't. And he was saying, well, wait a second. Bill Clinton lowered capital gains taxes, and tax revenue to the government actually went up. Why would you do that? And Barack Obama's response in that debate was because of fairness, which is patently absurd. I mean, it's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard of in my entire life. We're trying to level the playing field by stealing from people, taking away. Kurt Vonnegut wrote a short story about this in the 1960s called, I'm trying to remember the next story, but basically what it was, you'd actually have to weigh people down if they were good athletes and try to make everybody the same. That's what these people want to do. Harrison Bergeon, that's the name of the short story. It was fantastic. And that's what he wants to do to society? That's a silly.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. But everything is about equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity anymore. You know, it's called equity, not equality. And those two words are very easy to confuse. And that's what they do purposely when it comes to the language. I don't think this goes anywhere, but I'm with you on it being Barack Obama who is running this country. I am down with you on that. I firmly believe that. People look at me like I know it may sound a little weird, but I think I'm onto something here, because I do think Barack Obama has a huge hand in running the country. So I don't think this goes anywhere. That's just me, because it's clearly unconstitutional, right?
Yeah, one would assume so. That, I mean, you can't just decide and picking and choosing based upon you know people's color or whatever it may be, based upon the taxing in this country. I mean, we've been on this, had been affirmative action for a period of time, which quite frankly I think is racist. It's insulting to minorities to think that they can't compete along with everybody else on the same playing field. I mean, what was this? We're going to turn the entire country into like six-year-old soccer where we're going to have ties everywhere? I mean, it's nuts. That's not how we became the country that we become. Competition breeds excellence. Meritocracy is a wonderful thing. I try to work my butt off at my business to do a better job than everybody else so I can provide a service to my clients that at a better price than everyone else does. And that makes my competitors try to do the same thing. Who benefits from that? Everyone.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about retirement. And because this is about investments, what we're talking about here with this weird tax. Let's talk about retirement. As I think more and more people feel that retirement is getting further and further away, right? And I don't have a problem with that. I look at my parents. My parents they're in their 90s. You know, God bless them, but they're far outliving their life expectancy, right?
Yeah.
So if that happens, you're going to need a lot more money. So I think it makes sense to continue to work longer. You know, I have friends who retired quite young. God bless them. That's fantastic. But how much is a realistic amount of money that you need to have in various investments in order to pull the trigger and say, I'm done?
Again, it all depends upon what you want and what you need and what type of a retirement you want to have. I know. I'm not going to be the guy. I'm not going out to dinner at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Just not going to do it for the Blue Light Special. I don't want to change my lifestyle. So you know what? I'm going to choose to work longer. I've been trying to suggest to people for a long period of time to treat retirement not like you're checking out, because, again, it's not good for you physically or mentally either. Now, if you can't afford to, you better make sure you're volunteering and you're doing something else. You got to keep up with things. There's only so much golf you can play and only so many things that you can catch. You've got to be involved. I always suggest to people, try to put in 3 days a week at work. You want to talk about a change in your life. It's almost like having Thanksgiving week every single week, where you have a four-day weekend and you have a three-day work week, and then you're able to do that much more. You're able to spend more time with your loved ones and do more things. It's been my experience, and I've been doing this for over three decades now, that people that check out completely, they kind of regret it.
Yeah, I can see that. That's why I see all the ads on TV for like the places with a lot of activities for the seniors. I think also, you know, like I look at my grandparents. My grandparents retired. They just had a little one-bedroom apartment. They took maybe one trip here or there. It was a much different retirement than my parents. And my parents, you know, they have their friends and they're going all over the place. They had, you know, they had the personal trainer at the gym. They're doing this, they're doing that. To be able to have that kind of life, I think you have to put a lot more away. And I think our generation has to put far more away than their generation had to in order to be able to live like God. Like if you live into your 90s, you better put a lot of money away. I just don't think people think that far in advance.
No, unfortunately, they don't. And the trick is, it's not so much how much you got to save, it's when you start saving. You make more money spending time in the market than you do trying to time the market. And the longer you stay in, you allow that magic of compounding working for you, the better off you're going to be. And one other thing, Mary, that you missed in that, it's not just the longevity, which you're spot on. Again, it's a completely different demographic today. It's also that big, huge I word, inflation. And the way we are in this country right now with the Uniparty, both spending till, you know, God creation, $34 trillion in debt, and nobody is slowing this down. The Fed has to keep printing money, and the value of your dollar keeps going down. I always suggest to people, just type it into your search bar at some point in time, inflation calculator, and see what a dollar was worth 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago compared to today, because you're fighting against that as well. And the only thing, you know, everybody will say, hey, how to beat inflation. You can't. The only way you beat inflation personally is by investing and having a higher level of return than the inflation monster that keeps chasing you.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up inflation, because Biden's approval on inflation is 29%. 29% according to the latest YouGov economist poll.
Who are the 29% that are thrilled that they're paying that much more for groceries every day? Who says that? I want to pay more for groceries and cars and insurance and everything. That sounds great. I mean, how dumb can you be?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know what, though? I think there are some people who, I don't know, maybe they're independently wealthy. Maybe they put away a lot more. Listen, if you're a senior on Social Security, they always say, well, you know, I'm on a fixed income. I'm like, you get cost of living raises on a pretty regular basis. If my taxes go up, I can't go to my boss and go, by the way, my taxes went up. I need a cost of living increase. My boss looks at me and goes, get another job.
It's cost of living across the board. It's from tolls to coffee. They always talk about inflation. They put out inflation numbers. If we were to do inflation numbers the way that Paul Volcker did, it'd be over 10%. That's just the reality. I don't care how much a television costs, because I don't have to buy a television that often. But everybody's got to buy groceries on a regular basis. It's the bare necessities inflation that really is hitting Americans in the gut right now.
So let me ask you about one thing that, you know, the younger people who are trying to buy their first house, they're all complaining that, you know, I can't find a house. There's nothing on the market because nobody's selling, because where do I go if I sell? Like, I live in the People's Republic of New Jersey. I would love to get the heck out of New Jersey. My property taxes are $22,000 a year. And I said to my husband, I'm like, do we sell when it hits 30? Like, when? When does that happen? So I figure we got a couple more years and it's going to hit $30,000. But people who want to buy a house can't afford a house that's going to have $30,000 in property taxes with it. So the market seems to be a little stagnant in most places. The Fed is not going to lower the interest rates. They're leaving it because they're not having the effect on inflation that they would have. Is this going to be a housing bubble that's just going to break eventually because it's under so much stress right now? Or do we keep going up?
I think that, it's not just, you make a great point in regards to the costs, in regards to property taxes, also home insurance as well, that is going up. And quite frankly, there's just not enough supply out there. That what you're saying, in many states, even like states that have, no income tax whatsoever, but they have homestead exemptions like Florida, it's called golden handcuffs. People don't want to move out of the house because they don't want to lose what they're paying in property taxes at that point in time.
Right.
Add to the fact that, you know, Biden just pushed another initiative through where it's going to add $30,000 in costs to your home for all of this green nonsense that they got to put over in your house in order to build it. Not only that, the savings on energy pays off in 90 years. How stupid can you be? Government regulations are driving up the costs of building homes, which hurt people too. And young people, you're right, okay? The median price of a home today, it's basically it's seven times what's the average income is in the country. Now, when our parents bought homes, it was 3.5 times. So that's a big additional cost right now. And we're seeing more and more families actually work together and parents and grandparents helping the younger generation out to make those down payments. And I just suggest that people out there, the last thing in the world, it's real difficult. You don't want to be house poor, okay? You don't. You want to be in something that you think of your house as a monthly bill, and you want that monthly bill to be something that you can afford and you don't want to have to stretch.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I know I've been watching housing prices out west, and a lot of the areas out there, I see prices coming down because I think people who are buying second homes, you know, there was a big push for that during COVID. They're just not doing it now because and a lot of them are selling it now as inflation increases. People are saying, I can't keep this anymore. I got to get rid of this. I can't keep paying for the HOA fees and the taxes. And the taxes out there aren't much, but it's the HOA fees, which are new to me. I don't know about those things. So they're selling the homes, and you're seeing these things that, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago would sit on the market for a couple of hours and people were overpaying and buying in cash. Now I saw a house, which I can't afford, but I go to Zillow and Realtor.com and I look at all this stuff, and they decreased the price by $1 million. It went from 11 million to 10 million. So, you know, obviously not in my price range, but that to me is a huge dump of value, you know, when people are desperate, they're getting desperate to sell. So I think there's going to be some changes, and I'm kind of hoping that, especially for younger people who want to get into the housing market, because I think it's a good investment, and I think it's a good thing to have. Hopefully the market will come down for them, and you know, and then I can afford. I can afford my house here. I'm sorry.
There's not enough inventory. We have to free this up. Government regulations is making it that much difficult. The amount of cost for permits, everything that goes with it. If we can get the initial cost of homes down and get the government out of it, it'll be much, much better for younger families out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Markowski, thank you so much for joining me. You can find him on Watchdog on WallStreet.com.
Thank you, Mary, so much.
Thank you. And you can also watch his podcast, The Watchdog on Wall Street podcast. And I don't know how to tell you to follow him on X. I got nothing there. All right. Your call's coming up. Rob Carson Show, 800-922-6680. I'm Mary Walter in for Rob Carson here on The Rob Carson Show. Hey, are you tired of the woke services like Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu and more? Well, yeah, I'm tired of them too. So you need to get Newsmax Plus. It's the fastest growing streaming service in America. With Newsmax Plus, you get the Newsmax channel and you get Newsmax 2, their newest network. You can watch all their great shows with Rob Schmidt and Greta Van Susteren and Greg Kelly and Eric Bolling and more. And you get real news, informed opinion, and the most cutting analysis from Dick Morris, Carrie Lake, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Huckabee, Victor Davis Hanson, and many more. President Trump says Newsmax Plus is just terrific. Bypass the big media. Get the Newsmax channels. Great documentaries with actor John Voight and so much more. They even cover all the big Trump rallies. They never censor President Trump like the big networks. So start your free trial today. Yes, it costs nothing to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com to register. Then download the app and just start watching. Millions are watching Newsmax. Be one of them. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com today. Yes. So I do have some news for you that is breaking. The United States vetoed the UNSC Security Council resolution for full UN membership for Palestine. Finally. Some common sense is ruling, at least in the UN, from the Americans. As my friend Christine Flowers points out, a country that harbors terrorists and elects them to position of authority has no place at the UN. Now let's do China, Russia, Iran. Check back with me later when I get a blue check so I can complete the list. She doesn't have a blue check mark, so she said, check back with me later. Herman Sal hit me up on X and says, interesting how those protesters have not asked to be supplied with adult Pampers. I wonder why. Yeah. So yesterday, I said that, you know, our young men, the reason you saw the young men raising that flag is because young men in our country are becoming increasingly more conservative because they've been told their entire lives that, you know, the way they normally behave, boy behavior, is toxic. It's toxic masculinity. And they've been told that because of their white men, that they're the lowest of the low. They're the worst of the worst. And the women the women in America are becoming more liberal than men. 40% of young women aged 18 to 29 said they are liberal or very liberal last year. Young men in that age group, only 25% thought of themselves as liberal or very liberal. Women are becoming more liberal at a faster rate than men. And they pointed out the dichotomy at that on that campus at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where the boys are there protecting the flag and all these screaming lunatic girls are screaming at him and throwing stuff at him and everything else out of their ever loving minds. These women want to protest America to make a change, but for a country they've never been to, have no clue how they would be treated. They have no clue what their life would be like if they were ever shipped over to Gaza, but yet they hate America. They hate everything it stands for. They scream out death to America, but yet they want the young men to come and protect them, right? They call the police. That's who they want to come and protect them. I'm curious, is there anything we could do about this? 1-800-922-6680. I'll take your calls coming up on The Rob Carson Show. All right, I want to close out with some good news for you. This happened at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So they kept the groups apart. They had strict rules of how you could protest and where they could protest and how they could do it. So they had the groups, two groups really far apart from each other, and they're chanting different things at each other. And then the one group that is pro-Israel started chanting F Joe Biden. And then the other group, the pro-Palestinians, started chanting it back at them. So they were just going back and forth. It's the one thing they agree on. I thought it was hilarious. And it's a big problem for Joe Biden. But see, when you think you can't find common ground with someone, there you go. I'm Mary Walter. I will be back with you tomorrow. Thank you so much for letting me sit in here. And Brian, thank you so much.
WCBM Baltimore.